Let's make it happen, Captain.
From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
And I'm Gov Maharaj.
And welcome to Defrag. So, boy, let's recap here. We've been off for a little bit. Yep. You've been busy. I've been busy.
I was on vacation right there.
There.
Banff National Park, Alberta, nice. Canada.
Nice.
2 hours west of Calgary.
Yeah. Is that a good representation of what you were seeing there?
No, this doesn't even remotely do it justice.
Really?
No.
Wow, I'm pretty impressed by the picture, too. So.
Yeah, no, this is nice. It's nice. The picture's nice. I'll give it that. Right. But no, Banff, if anybody ever can go and take a vacation, go to Banff National Park.
Yeah.
It is gorgeous. And if you have the time, go and swing by Jasper National Park, go through the Columbian Ice Fields. I swear, one of the most beautiful places on the planet.
Wow.
It's great because of, it doesn't look like it's touched by people. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, granted, population in Canada is extremely small compared to the States.
Yeah.
Larger geographical area. Mm-hmm. So there's just tons of parkland. And you just go look in you know, this visage of, like, no power lines, no signs, no roads. It's just untouched. It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Weather was kind of iffy when I was up there. It was a little bit rainy, but not too bad. A couple of good hikes in.
I flew right over Canada and the North Pole when I went to Dubai recently. And yeah, I know. It's the way that it
okay,
went.
Okay, sure.
I don't know. I don't tell them which way to go. I just get on the plane and wait. There's so many islands up in Canada. It looks like you could give every Canadian like 10 islands and have some left over.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Looks quite nice. It looks very, very remote. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a great island. You'd never be able to get there. So,
well, once you got there, you're never able to leave.
Yeah, but it would be very nice once you got there.
Yep.
All right, and yeah, special thanks to Greg Duncan for the last show, indexing in the title that Larry got an infection over the summer, so I'm sure that will not follow me for the rest of my life. And my whole family appreciates that, Greg. Let's see, last show comments. Dave's touchscreen problem's been resolved. He reinstalled Surface Pro 3 firmware and Windows updates, all's well with swiping. I saw someone else that had that problem too in the coffee house.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, yeah, it's do the firmware and the updates and let me know if you have problems.
Brand new firmware system updates got released yesterday.
Okay.
For the Surface Pro 3. So highly suggest anybody to go and check for updates. I just check for updates every day.
Like, yeah.
What do I got? Update.
You should know what's there. But all right. Let's see. And Paul said we made his day by taking his questions. So we'll make his day one more time by just saying, hi, Paul. How are you?
Hi to all the Pauls out there.
Yeah. he said to go for the stealth bomber bike. I convinced my wife, and it will make that happen. But
you did convince your wife.
No, I said Paul needs to convince my wife. That's not going to happen as it looks so far. But I am looking at some different ones. I'm looking at the an iZip bike and also the eMazing Apollo. So not as fast is the problem. But the other thing, too, is I thought if I get a stealth bomber bike, I'm only going to just rack up a whole series of tickets trying to ride it in places that I shouldn't be.
Right.
So it's probably for the best that I don't anyway. So, yeah. All right. Well, you want to talk about this first?
Sure.
We've got something just sitting here on the desk.
Yeah,
so we're not even talking about it.
Kind of itching at it, right? So this is one of our picks of the week. This is the Matterinform 3D scanner. It just got released. It's about $400. What it does is you can take an object, I believe up to 9 inches tall, that will fit on this bed within the diameter of this rotating bed. You can scan objects.
Yeah.
You can import it into CAD software or really anything that'll read an STL. And then go and print it with 3D printers. I believe Office Depot has 3D printers now that end users can go and use.
Mm-hmm.
This is, I just find, is really cool. You can copy spare parts, you know, things that tend to break easily. I don't know about you, but you know the back covers on remote controls?
Yeah.
Those things constantly break, and you know you have this remote control, and then you have tape over it, and it just look really ugly.
Yeah.
You could use this and scan the back plate of your remote control cover, and then print it out. This is the Channel 9 guy.
It's the alien version.
The alien version of the Channel 9 guy. The software is, it's the first version of the software. There's some tweaks that you can do, but the reason why I colored it green is in order to have slightly better contrast. Normally the head is white and the scanner kind of just saw right through it.
There's a white board over there, so.
The scanner does really, really well on uniform colors. If the whole thing was gray, for example, it'd do much, much better than that. I took a scan earlier, and this is what it looks like. It's not perfect because there's a couple of technical difficulties during the scan. Lights were turning on and off, but you can do things like pan with your finger, or pan with the mouse. You can pinch to zoom, pinch out to zoom. And this is just the camera color representation of this object. What it does is it takes slices, pictures, and then rotates a few degrees.
Yeah.
In this case, I believe the default is 1.5 degrees. And then you can export it as an STL. I've already done the cleaning. This will perform a mesh, and it will basically take all these points and turn it into triangles. I've already pre-done a mesh on this one before. Don't worry, it doesn't look that great. There's some things that you can do to clean it up. So this is what it looks like. It's kind of a little bit of a blob right now, but don't take that as the final form of this. It was a relatively quick and dirty scan of this Channel 9 guy.
So was this, does this thing just use a camera to try to figure out the
two cameras.
Shape?
Okay. Oh, no, sorry. One camera.
But it's not doing like depth sensing like a Kinect sensor, is it?
It does with the lasers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right, nice.
Yeah, that's how it's able to get everything. You can kind of see the indent of the 9 right here. With different settings, you can get a much slower scan, but it would be much more precise.
Yeah.
And then you can import this into anything that'll take an STL, a CAD program, clean it up, redo the polygons on there. You can apply new surfaces to it. You can replace objects, and basically, replicate what you like.
Cool.
Their website goes into a lot more detail as to how you can do it, how you can buy it. This is not a review by any stretch of the imagination, but it's a really cool device. It's portable. It's a lot more affordable than a lot of other contenders on the market.
Yeah.
And it's really relatively precise considering its cost.
Yeah.
And all of the other advantages to it being, the portability.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to try hacking stuff up, if you want to make backups of different replaceable parts, you have a little girl, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, little doll parts.
Yes.
Constantly get lost.
Yeah.
Basically back them up.
Nice. Nice.
I saw this about a year and a half ago on Indiegogo, I believe. It's kind of like the Canadian equivalent of Kickstarter.
Yeah.
And this just looked too cool.
Yeah.
Too absolutely cool. This was going to be my foray into bridging between my lack of artistic capabilities, because I would like to 3D print stuff, but I can't actually create something to print propererly, right?
Yeah.
So this was my bridge. It's like, okay, well, let's see if I can just scan something, clean it up a little bit, and then go print it.
And how long have you had it?
2 days.
Okay. All right. So I was going to ask, how many things have you scanned? And
you know what? By the time I get home, playing with my kid, and then doing work, you know, it's 2 o'clock in the morning, and then by that time
weekend.
I'm tired.
Let's get a weekend in there, and we'll see. All right. And what's the name of it? What's the company?
Matter and Form.
Cool. Okay. All right. We'll link to it in the show notes. All right. First question here from Rod. Totally love the show. Thank you so much. My wife's desktop has been experiencing frequent blue screens of death recently. They're about once a week, sometimes more often. The bug check may differ. Please see attached pic for the most recent. However, it seems that though they are always related to the SIUSBXP.sys driver, when I look it up in the device manager, I saw that it's related to her Fitbit. This is odd because it's one of the older models. Unless Fitbit pushed out an update, which I wasn't aware of, and there's been no changes in quite a while, I've tried contacting Fitbit, but they haven't responded. The first thing I'd do, I'd uninstall everything Fitbit related and then just go re-download everything and give it another shot.
Yeah, we went back and forth on this one. It's kind of interesting because we kept getting different bug checks.
Yeah.
Some of it is possibly related to a setup. I got them to remove an external USB hub, mm-hmm. try getting everything just plugged in onto the machine itself. I haven't heard back yet. I'm actually going to be kind of curious as to figuring out why this started happening, you know, what's new about the system. But it's a very, very old driver that when I looked at this thing, the USB Fitbit driver was very old, and I did see some updates on Fitbit's website, so it's possible that it's already been fixed.
Okay, all right, cool. All right, from Robbie, I run an SFC.
System file checker.
/scan now, and received an error message that some files were corrupt and could not be fixed. I looked at the log files, and I really don't know what I'm looking at or for. Could you take a look and give me some clues? And he followed up with, I found a fix, not sure why it works. DISM/online/cleanup image/check health, and DISM/online cleanup image restore health. SFC/scan now, and I no longer get any errors.
That's great. Not sure why he ran this SFC in the first place.
Yeah.
The DISM command, all that really does is resets its internal database, make sure that it is consistent, compacts it, gets rid of old deleted items. Basically, it's a maintenance task.
And for someone who hasn't used SFC before, what would you use it for?
If you think that you have a system file that's corrupted, generally speaking, it's kind of a placebo.
Yeah.
I've not really ever seen it give perfect results.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of will give you the hint as to something is wrong, which is where the DISM command came into play. So, you know, great that the DISM command worked, but unless there's something, you know, seriously flaky about the system, I wouldn't even bother with SFC. It's not something you'd run normally.
Yeah.
It is possible to run after, you know, major updates, see if the updates left any garbage or anything like that, mm-hmm. make sure that the updates are properly installed. And again, DISM, the DISM command will ensure the consistency of its internal database.
Okay. All right, from Andre, I saw this hotfix in the RSS feed. Update to remove memory management flush serialization for all file system drivers in Windows. It's KB298-1965. What in detail is removed here? Also, the KB page shows that the fix is available for Windows 7, but on request page, I can only request the Windows 8 and 8.1 version.
I'll answer the second part first. I don't know why it's saying that it's available for 7, but you can't request it. It may be something that you have to phone in to CSS in order to get it. Not
okay.
sure. The title is kind of interesting. The thing that got removed is a perf inhibitor.
Mm-hmm.
So what we basically did was this particular update made it so that a particular type of pattern that's used to flush memory in a serializable fashion is removed so that it can be done in a parallel fashion. So something that was causing a perf impact has been fixed.
Yeah.
So there's now better perf across the board. The reason it got released in this particular manner is that it technically doesn't affect everybody. There's only very certain patterns that this particular fix would be helpful with, yeah. which is why it's released as a hot fix.
Yeah.
So it doesn't need to go to every user, but for those users that have a particular type of workload, really this is more of a server type fix.
Yeah.
That's where you would apply it. And you may get gains, but like I say, since it's a hot fix, it's not for general distribution. Most people won't just automatically benefit from it.
Okay, all right. From Robert, I've got a family member who has a lot of groups they belong to. So he wants to create a group email on Outlook with so many different members, adding each one to the contacts and putting them in the group doesn't seem to be the best way, and sometimes the list changes. He has emails with all the names and emails in the to box of an email. Adding each in single content just to add them to the group would really clutter up his contacts. Is there any other way to do this, a VB script or export as a text file? So this is how I would do it. Start an email, put all the people in there, and then click on File, Save As, and save it as a template. And then you can just double-click on it anytime you want, and you've got this thing already ready to go. Do you have a...
I don't have a better answer because that's not a scenario that I've ever come across. when I email... It's, you know, with an exchange group, it's all internal.
Yep.
I am rarely the sender of personal emails.
To lots of people.
To lots of people. No, that's what my Goves. Wife does.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, she sends the updates on my kid to family members. I don't do any of that.
It's all right. Like so she's
my PR rep.
Yeah, I know. I've got a PR rep and an admin. So yeah, so when you save it as a template, it'll make this OFT file, and then you can just double-click on it, opens up in Outlook, and you're good.
And then adding and removing from that is a lot simpler.
Yeah, just make a new template, save over it. Also from Robert, when I install an app and program in Windows 8.1, I sometimes need to give it an admin or elevated privs so it will install. I normally trust it, but I don't really know what it did to my system. Is there some way to look to see what got changed or modified? Is there a before and after snapshot of files change, drivers, ACL permissions, registries, etc.?
Yes. There's this tool from one of our very illustrious internal consultants, Aaron Margosis. Lua Buglight is the tool that I would use in order to figure that out. It basically shows bugs that are... with applications, and bugs is kind of a strong word here. The tool is designed to figure out what an app is doing such that it requires admin privileges. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, the other method of trying to figure this out is using something like Procmon, and then you can see, you know, what files and registry settings are being changed on the system. It is kind of unfortunate, right? You know, you have an application. How much do you trust it?
Yeah.
Right. You really don't know what it's doing. Where did you get it from? Right. Yes, you should really only trust things that are signed. Mm-hmm. You know, trust it from well-known publishers: Adobe, Apple, Microsoft. You know, the big names, and you'll be able to tell when something is requiring elevation and it is signed or not signed. For example, if you're running, you know, the command prompt, you'll see this blue banner.
Yeah.
This is signed by Microsoft, so it's a different kind of color. Let me see if I can find anything by a third party. Let's see if this one is signed. Yeah, so this one is signed by the third party as well. Where you would be looking at for potential issues is if something elevated and it was a yellow banner.
Yeah.
That means it's unsigned, it's asking for elevation. You can't actually know for 100% certainty that it is trustworthy.
Yeah.
Because it's not signed. There's some hoops that you have to go through in order to get things signed.
Mm-hmm.
If you really don't know, put it into a VM, you know, test it out first. If you don't really trust it, you kind of want to try it out. If you throw it into a VM, there's no harm, no foul. You reset your VM if something goes wrong. That's how I do a lot of my testing, is with a VM and not on my actual machine.
Okay. All right, next question. In the directory C Windows, Win SXS side by side, directory, a file called tiworker.exe is taking up 100% CPU usage. Is this a Windows program? Any clues where to start troubleshooting this problem, or is this a normal Windows function?
The TI worker is the trusted installer worker. That is what gets used when updates are being installed. It's
a
service
operation.
So
you might see that ramp up when you're doing an update.
Yes.
But it shouldn't be like that all the time.
Yeah, no, it should not be pegging your system for a significant period of time. In fact, normally you shouldn't see it if your machine is set up to run maintenance tasks at 3 a.m.
Yeah.
All the updates should be installed then, and normally you shouldn't see it at any other time.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you do see it, just let it run. There is an update going on in the background. You can check your Windows update log to see what's going on there. But otherwise, you know, just leave it alone. If you do find that it's, you know, lasting for, say, hours on end, mm-hmm. do let me know, because that's not supposed to happen.
Okay. All right. Next question. How can I output a list by folder of all my MP3 music, which I can then import into Excel so that I can select and consolidate into one folder?
Okay, this is, again, super low-tech. DIR, the extension MP3, WAC-S is for all subdirectories, and WAC-B means simple format, so you strip out all the headers and stuff.
Okay.
I don't have any MP3s on the system, so I'm just doing text files. And then, you know, that's basically what it looks like, you know, and it, these are all the text files that I have. It doesn't give any additional information, no extraneous headers, and then if you want to redirect that into a text file, you know, wait a few seconds, done, and there it is. You can import this as just a simple comma-separated file. Of course, there's no commas in here. If you wanted to delim based on backslashes, you can do that.
Mm-hmm.
Excel will just
slurp this up. Do that in Notepad. I mean, just replace with nothing. So,
and then you just import this directly in full path. You can manipulate it how you want in Excel. Export it again.
Yeah.
Iterate over it in a script file. There are obviously other ways to do this. You can set it up with a PowerShell script, but this was easy.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I like easy. All right, next question. I often use tethering to connect my Windows 8 laptop to the internet through my smartphone, but I'm worried about the amount of background data transferred for software updates. Is it possible to limit the background data even if Windows reports the connection as Wi-Fi?
Indeed. What you want to do is go to your Wi-Fi connection. You can right-click on it and choose Set as Metered Connection.
Okay.
That will automatically start limiting what goes on your metered connection. And you can do things like go into your OneDrive, for example, go under metered connections, and then you can start disabling stuff. Like if you don't want syncing done over metered connections, you can disable that stuff here.
Okay.
There are also other policies about updates that you can do in the Group Policy Manager for disabling stuff strictly related with updates.
Yeah, okay. All right, that's super easy. All right, pick of the week time. Pick of the
second
week.
Second pick of the week
second,
time.
Second and third. So, or no, our second. This was our
that first. Was our first.
Yeah, yeah, and we don't have a third.
Don't have a third.
All right, pick of the week time, glass wire. So,
well, we have a 2A.
Yeah, all right, 2A. So this is Glasswire. I saw this on Hacker News, and it was like, you know, a show Hacker News. A guy said, hey, I got hacked, and I made this tool, and it's pretty simple to use. I tried it out. It's very simple. It's a really interesting way to kind of monitor. If you're kind of paranoid, I don't know, would you call it paranoid, you and me? No? We're a little paranoid, maybe.
Just because you're paranoid doesn't mean someone's not out to get you.
All right, Nixon. So, anyway, you can install this. It'll tell you what's going in and out of your network, what apps are trying to talk back and forth, how much data they're sending. You have very simple ways to just shut things down if you don't think it should be talking to the internet. Mm-hmm. And it's I like it a lot. I installed it, and I'm actually using it on all my machines now. And I was surprised some of the stuff I found. Like, for instance, I'd start a Channel 9 video in VLC, and I see that it's trying to send a lot of data here and there, mm-hmm. which I don't understand why VLC would think they need to send data back and forth anywhere, but I don't know. That's
interesting.
What was happening there. So, I mean, it was a local file. But, try it out if that's something that you're interested in. And then you had another one that
mine is, again, very low tech. Something to consider when you have a software like this is that if you already have malware on your system, then it has the potential of disabling this. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you need an external force, in which case I go and mine my router logs, right? And I figure out what's going on there strictly based on the router.
I see why you don't have enough time for your new toy.
I will inspect my router logs, okay, maybe not quite as frequently as I should.
Yeah.
But I'd say every couple of weeks I'd go take a look at my logs and say, what are things talking to you here?
Yeah.
And then, router is actually really nice because you can block stuff at the router level.
Yeah. Per machine, too. So
per machine or, globally. If I want to block, say, a site that serves ads, right? Boom, it's gone. I never see those ads on any machine within my network, ever.
Yeah, my router is my line of defense for what my daughter uploads and what my son downloads. So it is a good place to do that kind of work. But glass wire, I'm kind of a fan of that. I like the UI. I like a good UI. I'm a sucker for a good UI.
Right, yeah.
And it has that, so cool. All right, that is the show for this week. Thanks for tuning in. We will see you next time.
Take care.